You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is March 28th, and this is the Bruins Beat, presented by FanDuel on CLNS Media. And welcome into the Bruins Beat on CLNS Media. My name is Evan Marinofsky. Hope you guys are having a great day, a great week. And on this episode, Connor Ryan and I get into this past weekend, which was quite a weekend for the Bruins. Feels like there's been a lot of these this season. They continue to impress, incredible wins. We get into the nitty-gritty of each win and what to take away. Obviously, they won both games. That's great, good opponents, but we know they're good. Why are they even better now from those games? We get into that. We also get into Mason Lowry, potentially. Again, this is being recorded Monday afternoon, so no news has come out yet, but we talked about Mason Lowry, his future, what he might mean to the Bruins if and when he signs, and we get into all of that. We also get into Oscar Steen, who did a pretty good job on Sunday of making a case to be in the lineup next year. Probably not this year, but next year. And again, with the Lowry talk, we also did kind of discuss the future, what he means to them, not just this year, but next year and beyond. Could he potentially replace somebody that's currently there on the back end? So we get into all of that on today's episode. So without further ado, here is my conversation with Connor Ryan. And we're here with Connor Ryan, presented by FanDuel. Connor, what is up?
Evan, I'm doing well. How you doing?
Doing great. Doing great, Connor. I think I know why you're doing so well. I think I know the exact reason. There's one reason I can pinpoint, and that is that your BU Terriers are headed to Tampa Bay for the 2023 Frozen Four. It's got to be a good feeling, as you predicted. Unbiasedly. Yeah. No bias in that. You just saw ahead.
I think, Evan, it's, the job's not done. Staying fixated on the goal at hand. Not surprised, that they punched a ticket there. It's par for the course for an institution like this, a fantastic program located in the heart of Boston, great campus, not in Newton. Doesn't say they're from Boston. It's what's expected right now, right? It's like waking up and, the sky being blue. There's no revelry from this camp right now because it's what's expected here. It's like you're expecting Lane Hutson to put up another like 3-point game on a national stage. It's just what's expected. So no more declarations. It's just taking care of business.
TCB, taking care of business. And Minnesota, that'll be a tough first round or Frozen Four matchup in the semis. But that's be a good game. Be a good game. I think we know who you pick in that game. But exciting Frozen Four. BU aside, good teams this year. Like high-end, top prospect kind of teams. And BU, Jay Pandolfo, head coach, former Bruins assistant. So good to see him doing big things and putting that team together.
And anytime you have institutions like Ohio State and Penn State take L's, it's always a good day. So
it is. It is, I must admit. It did make me smile. Obviously, BU is a UMass Hockey East rival, but I always root for Hockey East to be there somewhere in the Frozen Four. Unfortunately, couldn't happen last year in Boston. Probably best for BU they weren't in the Boston Nash in the Frozen Four, but that's okay. They're in it
this
year.
What are you talking about?
By the way, I'm not talking about anything. And Lane Hudson, as you said, oh, when he starts tearing it up for the Canadians, oof, that's when it's going to come right back to bite you. But hopefully he takes another year at BU. I would hope. I like defensemen to take 2 years in college first because a certain guy did that and it worked out so well. So that's my, for the rest of my life, 2 years in college. We'll get to someone, by the way, at the end of this episode or towards the middle, who's at the end of his second year of college, who you might see in a black and gold jersey or with the black and gold very soon. We'll get to that in a bit. First, though, this weekend, two huge opponents. Connor, my guess is most Bruins Beat listeners also listen to Poke the Bear. I don't know why you wouldn't. It's basically the same show. We do the same thing.
What are you
both.
Talking about?
We do the same thing in
why
both.
Why are you letting on state secrets, Evan?
I'm giving away state secrets here, but my guess is most of you also listen to Poke the Bear. And if you don't, you should. You should do that. That'd be a good idea for you to do. But on that show, we talked about last Friday, we talked about this past weekend. How much stock you taking into it? Because it was a kind of a trap weekend. Get the Lightning at 1 o'clock at home. Then you go right to Carolina for a 5 o'clock game the next day. You're not great in Carolina to begin with. And the Bruins come away with two wins. Shootout win, close win against the Lightning the day before. And I'm going to stick with my take of I'm not going to take a lot from it. There's not a, you know, I'm not going to, I think our take was more, we're not going to freak out if things don't go the Bruins way. But things did go the Bruins way, and they really shouldn't have gone their way. I mean, you were missing Bergeron, Marchand, and Lindholm in that game against Carolina. A lot of people, I tweeted that out, a lot of people were like, what about Foligno and Hall and Forbert? And I'm like, guys, I know they're out too. But this is a one-off game that those three, the three I mentioned were out. So let's take a deep breath. But did you have any big takeaways from this weekend?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you get 4 points against teams like Tampa and Carolina. I think it's just another, feather in your cap in terms of just, it's par for the course with how this team's going, right? It doesn't make anything deterring them. But I think we touched on it during Poke the Bear. I think especially that Carolina game, we view that as if you give them a good match, you get a 1 point out of it, what have you. You're at least making competitive down to PNC Arena. I think that's the last little hurdle this team needed to clear in terms of just having that confidence boost of like, all right, you probably have to go back down here in Raleigh at some point, potentially this postseason. Like, place has been a house of horrors for them for years now. I mean, I think they've lost, before Sunday, they lost six straight games here by a combined score of 25-7. Not great. And again, it's a new year. It's a team that has not been, you know, knocked down by adversity at all. But still, to get that mental hurdle out of going into a place like PNC Arena and coming away with a win like that, in the fashion that they did, right, where it's you really kind of dominate the first 40 minutes of play. You're obviously without a couple of guys in the lineup. Carolina surges back as expected, and then you're able to have the metal to kind of, eke out 2 points there. I think, you know, it's not like it's a season-defining win or anything like that, but I think for this team that has checked off, I think, every single box you want, right? Like, the last thing I think they really have to account for is power play and just keep on prescribing rest for guys. To finally go down to Carolina and beat a team in their own building like that, I think it's the last test, I guess, if you want to say this team needed to check off before they start getting ready for the postseason. So again, it's not a season defining win by any means, but another feather in the cap for a team that a whole lot has gone right for them, most of it by their own doing.
Yeah, the Sunday game was most impressive just because they were missing those guys. And I also say this, you know, beginning of that third period, as you said, Hurricanes surged back, score two goals, you know, like this, tie game, easy spot where the Bruins could have had a little bit of a letdown, continued. Carolina ends up scoring, you know, four goals in the third and wins the game pretty easily. But I'll give a lot of credit to Jim Montgomery, who a lot of people have kind of, you know, wondered, hey, what's his mark on this team been, aside from just, you know, a better culture? Calls that timeout after those two goals. Resets, you can see him on the bench, kind of, you know, he held it. It was not a game plan type, you know, timeout. That was a, hey, we need a second, you know, let's get this together here. You see it. They go out. They held their lead for the rest of the third. Had some good chances there as well. Had a good overtime. Thought they were going to score a number of times. They somehow didn't. And then they win it in the shootout, which, by the way, credit to Jake DeBrusk, who, it's funny, I was sitting watching the game with my friends, and I said, watch, he's going to come in and go the typical high blocker that move. He always does it. And he started to look like he was doing it, and he kind of went the other side, went top glove. So, again, to me, what was a lot, you know, very impressive about that game was Montgomery's handling of that situation, because that could have got away from them quickly. Again, you're without, as I said, Marchand and Bergeron and Lindholm. You're down in Carolina. Carolina's a hungry team. They want to prove themselves. They don't, you know, this is like not quite the level of this, but when they were beating the Leafs many years ago, when Leafs had a Zamboni driver in net, the other team wants to be like, hey, we can't be losing this team when they don't have those guys. And again, I think they pulled through. The other big thing on Sunday, 50 goals for David Pastrnak, 50 goals, 51 after the game ended, but scores his 50th. We both said he would score well over 50. I was going back and trying to find the clip so we could take victory laps. I couldn't quite find it, but I'm like 99.99999% sure that we said it before the season. Very easy decision. That was not a hard, that was not like a hot take either. That was, I think everyone knew it was a huge season coming for him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you look at just the returning cast that comes back, the fact you have David Krejci back there. You know, regardless where he's in line, I think Pastrnak's going to produce. It's not like that one-timer is, you know, losing any force in terms of what he brings. Like, his game itself is, more than anything, is probably just continuing to evolve and get better. I think you look at just how much his game has changed from maybe when he first started in the league, when he was more of a wrist shot, Deacon Dangle kind of guy. He still has it, obviously, but that you know, patented one-timer he has, it adds a whole new dimension to his overall game. So, again, were we surprised that Pastrnak's hit 50 goals? No, but for, you know, I think it's something he talked about post-game. It's something that he's not taking for granted, right? You look at where he was a few years ago when he had 48 goals in, 70 games, and all of a sudden COVID happened. Not to say that he was expecting a cataclysmic pandemic to happen again.
But, once in a 100-year pandemic.
But you can never know, right, in terms of situations where a whole lot can go wrong with injury or what have you. So I think for him to finally get over that, you know, that scoring hump, to put himself in the same class with guys like, you know, Neely and Esposito and Middleton and Hodge, you know, all these guys that are legends, and, you know, Pastrnak's, you know, well on his way to being in that same company if he's not already there, honestly. But good for him to finally hit that milestone. And I don't think it's a wild hot take, Evan, to say that he's probably going to have a couple more 50 goals campaigns on the horizon. I don't think we're really stretching there.
No, and with the money they're paying him, I think they kind of expect it.
That's also true.
You would hope. But I also say, like, the fact that he puts up 50 goals this season in this generation of hockey is incredibly impressive, to put up 50. I know some other guys in the league, Rantanen, McDavid, obviously, Draisaitl, are kind of around that, and not makes sense, but it's very impressive. You know, you mentioned Neely and Esposito and those guys, and Middleton, but to do it in this generation, to do it now, is just so freaking impressive, and to do it in the variety of ways that he does. And also, that's an easy game for him on Sunday, where you're without, you know, Bergeron and Marchand, and obviously you have David Krejci down the middle still, but, you know, you can kind of, no one would go against him if it was like, oh, he had a tough game in that one, you know, then what are you going to do? But to have the two goals he did, and to be the commanding presence that he was pretty huge. The other thing, I'll go back to Saturday's game, and even a little bit on Sunday, the standing up for each other. This was another thing we talked about on Poke the Bear. Guys not taking any shit. Jeremy Swayman wants to fight so bad. You can tell. Just dying. He's like a guy at the bar who, you know, accidentally bump into you and then go, what's your problem? Yeah, what? You want to step outside? Like, he's at that point now where he's just like.
So you at the last drop.
Yeah, that's definitely me. Yes, that is me just bumping into folks, saying, "You want? You're gonna play that on Touch Tunes? Take it outside. All right, we're gonna put you in your place." But he wants something. You can tell. But you even see McAvoy. I mean, I know he negated a Tyler Bertuzzi goal, who, by the way, poor Bertuzzi. I mean, at this point, should have so many more goals. They're just finding ways for him to score and for it not to count. But, you know, takes him down. And then you see the game against the Lightning. Hathaway fights Maroon. Lauko's tackling Ross Colton. They just have that feel of a playoff team. I know this is, like, obvious, but we talked about this a little bit on Poke the Bear. But, you know, past teams didn't feel like they had that edge to them that this team does.
Yeah, no, I think when you look at it, right, it's not like, as we said, the game has changed so much even over the span of 10 plus years that, like, you know, this team isn't going to harken back to like the 2010-11 Bruins, nor are really any teams these days going to do that, where it's just like, we're going to physically dominate you all 60 minutes. But I think you look at this team, it's Almost kind of like Tampa, right? Where, yes, you look at Tampa and their success, and of course they've got the star talent in net. We've got Hedman, Kucherov, Stamkos, and all those guys, but they can kind of play in a variety of different ways. They can beat you 7-5, or they can win 1-0 in a grind out kind of slugfest, right? You look at just at least the last couple of years, and they had a lot more depth, that ability where they have guys like Coleman and Barclay Goudreau and Yanni Gord, these guys that are pains in the asses to play against that. You know, whether it's dropping other guys on the forecheck, responding when things get rough. You look at their decor that makes it a challenge every time you want to bring the puck into grade A ice. Like, those are the things that I think in today's NHL are value can go a long way, especially over the course of multiple 7-game series where it's, you know, it's something that Dmitry Orlov kind of talked about with Garnett Hathaway, why he's so effective. It's not just the bone crushing, you know, check or what have you. It's the fact that it's like constant, right? It's the constant forechecking, the constant hitting against the glass that adds up if you're a defenseman. You deal with it the first time in game one, the juices are flowing. Game five, when you're aching, you've got a whole bunch of injuries and it keeps on coming. You keep on getting hit into the boards by a guy like Hathaway. Drives you nuts. Wears on you over the course of a series. So I think you look at just the ways that hockey's evolved in terms of finding those guys that can play with like that speed, skill, and grit. They have so many guys that can answer the bell in that regard. So yeah, I think you look at just, of course, like the star power is there. The secondary scoring has taken huge strides forward. The defense is great. Goaltending, we all know how great that's been. But I think we look at just the personnel and the skills that they have all throughout the lineup. You have more guys that can, push back when needed, which again is going to come in the postseason,
which is going to help a lot. And again, it's just an added element to this team alongside its depth, skill, good goaltending, good defense, everything that the teams that play the Bruins have to face. Again, I don't know who's beating the Bruins over a course of 7 games. That's a conversation, though, that will push out towards the playoffs.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Now, I teased it a little bit at the beginning of the show. I've been checking my phone quite a bit, waiting to see when that tweet notification might pop up. It has not happened yet at 2:30 on Monday. But Mason Lowry was the Ohio State Buckeyes, as you said, were taken out in the second round of the NCAA tournament. Talking hockey, of course, not March Madness. We wouldn't really care about that in terms of the Bruins. Mason Lowry, though, had quite the game against Harvard, though. My goodness. Yeah. That was a drubbing. And no one saw that coming. You just look at that first day of games. It was like 32-2. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
Awful. Like, it,
yeah.
Very unwatchable game. Considering how close the NCAA tournament usually is, bonkers in terms, especially a lot of those Big Ten teams just obliterating opponents. So
wipe the floor. I'm also not, this is a college hockey rant, but I'm not really worried. I know some people were saying like, oh, is this bad for college hockey? It's 1 year. Every year the games are wicked close. Like, it's every year. This is a one-off type year. I don't think there's no reason to worry about anything. But Mason Lowry, though, had quite the game against Harvard. He had quite the season, again, recovering from his knee injury that he had last summer. Now he's done his 2 years. He's done 2 years in college. I know the feeling among lots is that he'll probably end up signing with the Bruins at the end of this season. Maybe he goes back, but again, I think the odds are pretty much in his favor of signing. That's a huge addition, and that's going to be interesting guy to see develop. He credits Adam McQuaid. He's done that a lot with how good McQuaid's been in his development at Ohio State and kind of giving him advice as time rolls along. And I think a lot of people are wondering, you know, can he step in and make an immediate impact? I think it's tough. Maybe he gets a game or two at the end of the season, but I don't know, Connor. What do you think?
Yeah, I feel like it's a little bit skeptical in terms of just how much, you know, runway he's going to have, especially, I think you just look at just the way this team is built. Again, maybe he has a game or two, but even then he's a guy that I'm curious to see just how he adapts, you know, first to the AHL level first. Like, you, again, we've talked about Lowry countless times before, like how unique of a prospect he is. I mean, he's like, you know, Thor, he is a probably third pairing power play specialist kind of guy, which when you look at just his frame as well, very unique player, like high end. What is he like, John Carlson, right? Like in terms of just like that, that you don't see defensemen who are, you know, 6'4" plus that have his skating and his puck play and all those things that make him such a unique player. But that being said, a lot of those guys often need some time to adjust to the next level, right? I mean, it's defensemen usually have the longest kind of learning curve or development curve once they get to that next level. So, and I think it's kind of a luxury for the Bruins, right? This isn't like Charlie McAvoy in 2017 where it's like, hey, thanks for signing. Go up against Eric Carlson. Like, and again, there's some guys that probably relish that opportunity, but the Bruins have the luxury of, you know, not needing to accelerate these guys beyond what their current timeline is. It's kind of like you look at the inverse of that was like Jake DeBrus spent a whole season down in Providence and really benefited from it in terms of adjusting for a full year. It's like when you don't need to rush guys up here, it often tends to benefit some of these prospects. So maybe he does get a game. I'd like, hopefully if he signs, he gives him, you know, 7-8 games in Providence and, you know, gets that under his feet. But still, I think you just look at adding him to the system is an exciting thing because, as you know, we've talked about before, that even in the post-Bergeron era, this is still a very, very good foundation to build around. And if you still have guys like Lauri and Lysell and like even Matthew Poitras having a really, really good year in the OHL, like as much as this pipeline is barren, I'm not saying like, oh, Bruins should have a top 10 prospect system. They do have a few guys that could, you know, make an impact in short order. And if you're the Bruins, you need those guys to fill into a few of those spots in the years ahead.
You know, you mentioned Lauri being a third pairing power play specialist. And when I look ahead to next year, they have some cap issues. They are not going to be in great standing with the cap. They're going to have to be some casualties most likely this offseason. Obviously, Evan Gold and Don Sweeney, two of the very best at handling the cap. So I assume they're going to pull out some tricks and do some cap gymnastics as they always seem to do. But is there a chance that somehow they feel confident enough in Lauri that they can say, hey, maybe this makes a guy like Matt Grzelcyk expendable next season where, you know, you can deal him for a pick if you'd like to or something like that. I'm curious if that might be an option. Now, it doesn't feel like there's enough time in Providence for Lauri to have where they can comfortably say, hey, we can trade Grzelcyk and Lauri can step in next year and that's going to be that. But maybe there's some form of, you know, there'll be a platoon or there just won't be, you know, they won't fill Grzelcyk's spot immediately. But the idea being, hey, Lauri is going to be the cheaper version of him.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's the same with you look at some of this depth on like the bottom six where a guy like Lauko, who's been fantastic this year, could step into another role next year. It's just like the natural thing that I think a team that's in the process of retooling their roster needs to do. So, yeah, if it's a guy like Lauri who steps in next year or the years ahead, like those are the spots that, again, rather than re-sign a guy who's 30 years old to a new contract, you know, sometimes the more prudent you do is add through the system and having a guy like Lauri, if he's added in there and he's playing at a high level at, you know, under $1 million his first couple of years or, you know, $1.5 million on like a rookie deal, that's what you got to do, right, in order to stay cap compliant. Because, again, Bruins have a lot of financial decisions to make in the coming years. They probably have to shed some money just in order to retain some of these key pieces on this roster. So if in the next year or so you have guys like Lauri or Fabian Lysell stepping into a middle six spot, like that's what you need to do in order to, you know, remain cap compliant while still fielding a very competitive roster.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Speaking of players, by the way, next year who could make an impact, Oscar Steen. Good game against Carolina on Sunday, was effective, served his role, did a good job. That's a guy who potentially next year could be a candidate. I don't think this year he's going to see much. I mean, he's depth in the playoffs if you've like really needed him. But next season, if he's in your bottom six, that's fine, right? With the way the cap is, I think that's a solid option. What do you think?
Yeah, exactly. I think you look at a guy like Steen. I think when you look at the bottom six, as much as like you look at like even guys like Hathaway, and how valued they are. And again, he's been fantastic with the Bruins. You look at just the number of options they have there, whether it's Lauko, Steen, Mark McLaughlin, who I think a lot of people were shocked didn't even make a spot out of camp because he was fantastic there. And they will have no shortage of, I think, guys that can follow
Johnny Beecher.
Bottom six, Johnny Beecher, right? Like, there's just so many guys that can step in there. So the Bruins, again, it's an arduous undertaking to replace a Bergeron or a Krejci down the middle. Like, again, no shit. But in terms of, you know, filling the rest of the lineup, the rest of the roster, they do have guys that, you know, can step into roles. Like, and again, it's always tough when you map out the progression of a prospect. Because if you ask, I think probably a lot of people entering the season, you're like, Lauko, you know, he's had a few shots up here. Like, he's been solid in spurts, but, you know, what is he going to get pushed out as a 2018 draft pick for a guy like Beecher or other guy that's maybe newer into the system? And what do you know, Lauko, since he's been up here, every game he's up there, he's making an impact, making the most of it. So, I think a good lesson in terms of, you know, it's not always the prudent move to just, you know, sum up a prospect's career off of maybe what they've shown in the last year or two. Every year is kind of a new slate. And I'm sure next year when the Bruins are fielding a new roster and they're looking for other guys to step in, whether it's Lauko or many other guys, Steen, there'll be plenty of guys that'll be lining up there for that opportunity once camp opens.
A lot of opportunity. But again, that's next year. This is this year. Lots to talk about. And Connor, lots to write about as well. What can people look forward to from you over at Boston.com?
Yeah, we're going to have you covered every step of the way with game recaps, columns, features, breakdowns, all that stuff over at Boston.com. So please follow all of our stuff over at Boston.com. Again, we cover everything that's happening in Boston sports, and not just the Bruins. Celtics are on a roll now before they start their playoff run. Patriots in their offseason. Red Sox starting up this week as well. So we'll have you covered every step of the way. And if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can at ConnorRyan_93.
Go do all that. And remember, subscribe to New England Hockey Journal. That is Connor Ryan. I'm Evan Marinofsky, Bruins Beat. Listeners, have a great rest of your week.